It's playoff time. Big stakes, bigger promotions. Every day of basketball's playoffs, DraftKings will have $20,000 in total prizes up for grabs. The best part, it's free to get your shot at these daily cash prizes. DraftKings will be offering two free-to-play pools every day of the NBA playoffs, offering players a free shot at $20,000 in total prizes.
DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to enter. Just download the DraftKings app, go to pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. All you have to do is answer a handful of questions around what you think is going to happen during that day's basketball games and track your results throughout the evening. Questions will range from which team will hit the most threes to which team will score first. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience.
Download the top-rated DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN when you sign on to get your free shot at $20,000 in total prizes every day of the basketball playoffs. Head to DraftKings pools page to get your shot at huge cash prizes. Promo code THPN for a limited time only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for full details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Straight Up Sabres presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and Buffalo Fanatics. As always, I'm Brendan.
And I'm Taylor.
And we are kicking off this episode today with the very, very sad news that Buffalo Sabres legend Rene Robert has passed away. And to talk about his career as a Sabre and his legacy in life, we have brought on a special guest. So Taylor, would you like to introduce?
Yep. So we have Kevin Pritchard. Kevin, you might know him from Twitter. He also, in the past, was a Sabres blogger. His Twitter handle is at BFLO blog. And Kevin's a huge Sabres fan and has been for a long time. So we just wanted to get his perspective on one of the best Sabres of all time. So, Kevin, thanks for coming on. And what are some memories that you have of Rene Robert? What do you think of when you think of him?
It's funny. I was trying to think when we were talking yesterday, what specifically, like, Rene Robert memory I really had. And it's not Rene Robert that stood out for me anyways. It was the whole concept of the French Connection. So when I was growing up, when I was a kid, 5 years old, and the Sabres went to their first Stanley Cup, and that's really like when you start to get into sports and you're just naive and oblivious to everything except only the good things that happen, right? And when you played street hockey, if you were a forward, you were Gilles Perreault or Rick Martin or Rene Robert. That was it. If you were a defenseman, you were Jim Schoenfeld. So the memories aren't necessarily of Robert, although there was the Russian series where he was just dominant in that game against the Russian Wings. But for me, it's the whole concept of the French Connection.
Right. Go ahead, Brent.
Oh, I was just going to say, so I kind of wanted to ask, you know, the French Connection, it is really, especially for people like Taylor and myself who weren't alive to see them play, they're talked about, and rightfully so, as this kind of mythical entity, you know. And I'm just kind of curious, you know, in doing some reading up too on Rene and more broadly the French Connection, it kind of seemed like they each had their own particular trait or skill set that they brought to the table that made them so special. And the thing about Robert that I gathered, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but for Perreault and Martin, they were more flash, whereas Robert was just kind of like that model of consistency a bit, where he wasn't flashy, but he was always going to just be there and be consistent. Would you agree with that?
Well, he was definitely the more defensive minded of the three forwards. Like when he was on right wing, and he often was the forward who had to drift back up high and cover on the defensive end. And he also ran the point on the power play back in those days. But the thing, all three of those guys had their own unique whatever that they brought to that line. Like Gilbert Perreault was absolutely the flash. He was, when the puck was on his stick, even in his own end, the whole odd would kind of stand up and kind of take notice. Rick Martin was definitely the guy that had that wicked slap shot. And Robert was the guy who just found ways to beat you. I'm trying to think of all the goals I can remember Robert scoring. I think they were all wrist shots. Like, I don't remember anything. So Perreault had the flash. Martin had he was a fast skater too, but it was his slap shot. And for me, Robert was the wrist shot, and he was the guy who kind of covered up. And if anyone was going to get in a fight on that line, it was absolutely Robert. The other two weren't interested in that very much at all.
So obviously you, anyone who follows you on Twitter knows that you're at least a fan of the French Connection. Your profile picture is young Gilbert Perreault. And obviously Perreault is now the last living member of the French Connection after Rick Martin passed away about 10 years ago around this time. But what can you say about how Perreault and Martin, in fact, Perreault and Martin were probably for a long time the two best forwards the Sabres had, and you could make an argument for Martin as the second best forward in Sabres history. But what is that becoming a hockey fan in, like becoming a hockey fan when that is something you can cheer for? How can you compare that to pretty much every other era of Sabres history when you're not getting that kind of excitement? How much do you think that factored into your lifelong love for the Sabres? And I know it's probably not as much love these days, but.
Well, I think, you know, when you're 7, 8, 9 years old, that's when you come into that like naivete love of, you love your home team. You're going to love whoever the players are. Like if you were, you know, if you're a 10-year-old kid right now, you know, it sucks, but you know, you're out there pulling for Eichel and Reinhardt, right? Like right. They're the ones that kind of craft your love for it. I guess I was fortunate in the regard that we got to see such a dominant line. I mean, hockey was even more of a niche sport back then than it is today. But, you know, all of Canada talked about the French Connection. And in fact, Perreault was the first draftee who was French Canadian who wasn't assigned to the Montreal Canadiens. So he was the first one that they broke that rule went away. It used to be, if you were born in Quebec, then you automatically went to the Montreal Canadiens, and Perreault was the first forward that they eliminated that rule for. So all of Canada was taking notice of the French Connection because of their hometown, you know, their home province. And you would watch Hockey Night in Canada and it was regularly featured and you thought that was just how it was always going to be. And then, you know, the 80s came and you know, there was a lot of mediocrity in the 80s of missing playoffs or getting bounced in the first round. I guess we traded all for that right now, but, but yeah, it was nice to come into hockey at a time when hockey was new to Buffalo. I was born the same year the Sabres were born. So I never knew a time when they didn't exist.
So one thing I'm curious about too, you know, kind of circling back to the point about for a lot of fans, they weren't alive to unfortunately see the French Connection. But when you think of Rene Robert, is there any Sabres or even just generally speaking players in the NHL that you would look at as a hockey fan as maybe like a comparable to the kind of style of play that he really brought to the ice every night?
That's interesting because I think it's hard to compare across different eras. Mm-hmm. Because the game was so different back then than it is today. Like the free skating that existed back then. And like I said earlier, when Perreault touched the puck or Martin or Robert and they started going up the ice, the entire odd kind of rose to their feet at the same time in anticipation of what was going to happen. And I don't think you see that anymore with a couple rare exceptions, right? That at one single player is going to get an entire building excited and engaged just because they have the puck on their stick. I can only think of a couple that would even come close to that, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even think Eichel does it. Certainly not these days.
Right. Very true. Right.
So with the French Connection, like they came together very quickly by the, I think it was the third year that the franchise existed. They already had it together. And Perreault is obviously the first draft pick they had, but Martin played for them between 71 and 80. And then basically by the age of 30, he was out of the NHL due to injuries. His last really good season was when he was 28. Robert ended up, I think he got traded to the Colorado Rockies.
For Van Bock, and then I remember, right?
Yep. And then he was done by the time he was 33, which I guess isn't all that young. And then Perreault, I never really thought about this till recently because he played 17 years, but he was only 34, I believe, when he retired and then came back briefly and unretired and then for pension reasons. And then, but he was still 34, 35 when he retired the second time. And these days you see most stars play till 37, 38, sometimes into their 40s. Especially if they are as successful as those guys were. But all those guys really stuck around Buffalo and played an important role in the organization, despite not playing here, Perreault aside, the other two not playing here for super, super long. For one example here, I just wanted to bring up Bulldog Chris Parker from WGR tweeted today that he saw on Wikipedia that the driveway in Rene Rivera's home was constructed with pieces of the odd after its demolition in 2009. So it meant so much to these guys. And I think that obviously has to do with how beloved they were in this town and how successful the team was and what a good franchise it used to be. But I'm sure this strikes you as much as me that you can really contrast that with these days. I don't play any players that on the current team that want out or any recent teams that want out and don't really want much to do with Buffalo anymore. But does that kind of, do you also see it that way?
I think it's always interesting. The guys that stuck around from that era of the team, you know, Robert and Martin both made Buffalo their home. Fred Stanfield stayed here. Larry Playfair stayed here. I could probably go on and on. Rick Seeling stayed here. You still see him around town. You know, those guys all stuck around Buffalo. And I think there was a love affair with the city and with those players that I guess the closest you can get to it was maybe like the 2007 Sabres, the way the city kind of fell in love with the hockey team. But this was unique in the standpoint that they were the pioneers. They were the first guys to put that sweater on. And I think, you know, Martin came here in 72 and Robert 73, or I want to say that's right. Those are really the beginning of the Sabres history. The Stanley Cup run in 75 was just an electric time in Buffalo. And I think that love that we showed to those players, there was some loyalty that came back our way too. And that's why they stuck around.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, Kevin, we appreciate your time here. I know you have to get going. Just one more question I wanted to ask. Sure. If you could do one thing, make one appointment, if you were in charge of the Sabres for one day, what would that change be?
Oh, man. Come on, Taylor. You didn't give me any time to prep on that one.
No, one I just change? wanted to get your feeling on that.
You know what? It honestly would be find a way to embrace the Sabres alumni and make them part of the organization again. There was a time when the alumni and the front office were aligned and there was a mutual love and respect there. And I don't see that anymore. And I don't know if it stems from the Sabres just not being good or if it's the current administration not wanting to front the whatever minimal cost that there would be there. But I think incorporating the alumni back into the everyday function of the team and letting fans see and interact with former Buffalo Sabres would mean a lot to me. And I think probably to the majority of the fans.
I agree. I mean, a great way to do that would be to restart the Sabres Hall of Fame again.
Yes.
But yeah, so I appreciate you coming on, Kevin. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, again, thank you so much to Kevin Pritchard for joining us, and make sure you're following him on Twitter at BFLO blog. Really great insight there. Very cool to talk to somebody who was able to see Rene Robert playing, the French Connection playing while growing up. And he brought up a lot of interesting points too. I think just with that general, you know, mutual affinity between players and fans, and that being something that's just really sorely missing right now. And it's something that, at least for me as a Sabres fan in their mid-20s, and I'm sure, Taylor, you feel the same way as well, that, you know, we got to experience that, as he alluded to, in like 05 to 07, because that was just like a complete rebirth of, I feel like, a lot of people's Sabres fanhood, even though we were only by that point less than 10 years removed from a cup appearance. But I was a huge Sabres fan growing up as a kid, like all the way back, just absolutely nuts about them. But even still, like once 05, 06 came around, it just felt like that went to a new level. And it would have been incredible to go back and just experience that in the 70s, is not only, you know, not having, I guess, the benefit of having a history of the team, just like this fresh thing starting off and just taking it for a ride, really. I mean, it just sounds like back then it was just an absolutely electric atmosphere, night in and night out at the Odd.
Yeah, for sure. That was just a different era for pro sports too. Mm-hmm. Like guys like living here full time, they were like, they might've been local celebrities, but they weren't like unreachable the way they are now. Like you could see, that's even changed in the past 10 or 15 years. But yeah, like the way the Odd was, it was such a small and such a unique building. The team was great. The team was exciting. Hockey was way more exciting back then, for better and worse, frankly, in terms of some lifelong injuries I'm sure some guys suffered. But it's definitely different now, and it's impossible to look at it as anything's gotten better. I mean, I guess you could say in the past, you could probably say, hey, nicer seats, more room. Now, you know, seats haven't been reupholstered in 25 years and they're covering bird shit.
It's, yeah,
fair. You have less access to the players. It's prohibitively expensive to buy tickets. The team's bad. Hockey's a lot less exciting than it used to be. In a lot of ways, things have gotten worse. And I think that unfortunately is magnified in times like this, but I just wanted to throw out some numbers for, I'm sure there's people that pretty much any Sabres fans heard of Rene Robert. And if you've been to the current arena, you've seen his number in the rafters with the other guys in the French Connection. But just real quick to illustrate how good he was, even though he was probably the third best player on his line, in 10 years with Buffalo, he scored 382 goals and had 313 assists. So he had 695 points in 681 games. And unfortunately, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong page. That was Rick Martin's page. Rick Martin was also good, also no longer with us. Sorry, let me read Robert's real quick. 222 goals, 330 assists, 552 points in 524 games. So an even better points per game basis, but not as good goals-wise. But still, yeah, he unfortunately did not play much after he was traded to Colorado. He had one good year in Colorado for the Rockies, and then had 32 points in a year he split between Colorado and Toronto. And by the age of 33, he only had 37 points in a season, and he was done. Like I said, it used to be a rougher sport.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's no other way to put it. He's one of the very best to ever put on a Sabres uniform.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll be very, very sorely missed. And, you know, it's one of the things that has been, in a way, like, interesting in a way to just see over the past, you know, couple of days since this news unfortunately broke, is just hearing, you know, similar to Kevin, just everybody's firsthand accounts of seeing him play and what it meant to them to see him play. You know, now, as you had mentioned before, unfortunately, there's only one third of the French Connection remaining with us in Gilbert Perreault. But it goes without saying what Rene Robert meant to not only Sabres fans, but to the community. And to honestly, too, I mean, like, a lot of people's childhoods and upbringings, you know, like that, yeah. The French Connection really shaped a lot of kids who grew up in the 70s, like, just their interest in hockey. And, you know, without that line and Rene Robert's contributions, you know, I think that hockey in Buffalo would look a lot differently.
For sure. And this is something I wish I would have mentioned earlier when we had Kevin on, but the hockey landscape was so, so different when the Sabres got here. The Sabres were not coming to a hockey hotbed, even though we'd had some other pro teams. We had, like, the Buffalo Bisons hockey team. We've had a Buffalo Bisons in every sport, but we did have a hockey team here. We had some history with it, but really, sure, you could play at the Odd. You could play at Nichols. You could, like, what other indoor rinks were there? There were not many indoor rinks at that time. I remember seeing Paul Wieland, one of the original employees, speak a couple of years. He said he believes there was 3 full-time indoor rinks at the time.
Wow.
So that would be Nichols. Maybe, you know what? I don't know what the other ones would have been.
Mm.
I think Holiday would have been there. Kaz used to be an outdoor rink, but right. Most of these rinks did. There wasn't town rinks. There was no West Seneca town rink, no Cheektowaga town rink, Depew. Maybe the Pepsi Center might have been there at that time. I'm not actually sure. Or, I mean, there must be at least one more, but there are so many more rinks here now. And it's, despite the Pegula's best efforts, this is one of the most hockey rabid markets in the country. Not in terms of just even watching games, but we always have a consistent amount of NHLers. We have a consistent amount of women playing college hockey, and now in the NWHL. We have probably a higher percentage than almost anywhere outside of Minnesota, Boston, of people playing youth hockey. And there's like 15 other rinks I could mention that have opened up since the Sabres got here. So those guys deserve a ton of credit in that happening. Like, you know, like, more than anyone else, I would like to give the the credit to players first for what happens on the ice. So like obviously Punch Amalak was great and the Noxes were great, but like the guys on the ice that made it happen, and not just the French Connection, other guys he mentioned like Schoenfeld, guys like Don Luce, I'm sure, played a huge role. Roger Crozier was goalie, I think, until like 74. A lot of really some of the most important athletes in Buffalo history on top of that. And it is really just kind of a sad thing that he wasn't really that old. And Martin very much was not that old when he died about 10 years ago. So two guys gone too soon.
Well said. Very sad. And best wishes to his family and everything too. And to all the people who have those memories, like we talked about, you know, it's a really tough thing to lose somebody like that you idolized growing up. And, you know, we know that he'll be sorely missed here in the Buffalo community. So not really a whole lot else going on Sabres wise at the moment. You know, on top of what we had talked about last episode, really not a whole lot of movement on the Jack Eichel trade front. Same can be said for both Rasmus Ristolainen and Sam Reinhart. Really hasn't been anything new in the way of rumors at all, too, on top of that. I mean, the only thing I really had seen is that Columbus is involved and is pretty heavily involved in discussions. Anaheim, we know, continues to be. I wanted to actually ask you this, Taylor. I think we both are in agreement here that Jack Eichel is one of the best players in the NHL. When he is healthy, he is without question one of the best players in the NHL. And I've seen a lot of people, specifically in talking about like the Ducks, for example, who believe that the Sabres can still end up getting a good return from the Ducks if it doesn't include Zegras or Drysdale. And then thinking about it over the past couple of days and just kind of like weighing that, like if that's actually possible or not, I would say independent of whatever else Anaheim offers, that I just don't agree with that at all. I think that with Jack Eichel and the neck injury aside, considering the fact that any team that ends up trading for him is obviously going to have to be in some sort of agreement with him on how this is going to go. And there's probably going to be conditions involved, I would have to think, too, with something like this, with the injury concerns there. But regardless of that, it just feels like if you are not able to get a team's best young player, prospect, whatever, like far and away their best, plus a bunch of other capital for a guy who is a legitimate top 10 center in the NHL, it seems like it's a failure. You know, if we're talking about the O'Reilly trade, if you were to say one of these like supposed hauls that's been thrown out there, like I know Chad DeDominicus had put out there some sort of proposal that had looked like Max Comtois, the third overall pick, Jacob Perreault, who was a late first round pick a couple years back. And then I think maybe John Gibson or another piece in there as well. If I'm looking at that trade, I think no matter what, if Zegras specifically, but even Drysdale, if they're not in that trade, it's a failure. If it's ROR in that circumstance where you're at least getting like a top three pick back in return, then like, yeah, whatever. I mean, it maybe would make the blow feel a little bit less harsh, but for a player like Eichel, it should not be unreasonable for them to at least be getting a team's absolute unquestioned top player under the age of like 21. Would you agree with that?
100%. Yeah. My point has been that they should be going after Zegras and the third and maybe a first for the year after. Like we all want to get another pick in that 2022 draft. Yeah. He's one of the best players in the league. So if you don't have a trade for him this offseason, then just wait. Just wait for him to either play or not. I mean, I don't know. The situation with his neck is another issue that I'm not really qualified to weigh in on. Mm-hmm. But if there's not a good trade, wait. Obviously, don't do a trade if you can't with Anaheim if you don't get Zegras or Drysdale. That seems ridiculous. And in fact, just don't do it if you can't get Zegras.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the other hand, we saw a very interesting, thought-provoking proposal out there today. Not today. Sorry, this is yesterday, maybe 2 days ago.
Oh my God! From Columbus. The literal worst trade proposal I've ever seen in my life, and I don't think I'm exaggerating. You wanna talk about it? Stumbled across it for us.
I'm trying to remember exactly. Was it Eichel in the first for Seth Jones in the fifth. That was it. That was the whole trade, right?
Yeah.
Or did they add like another second or something? Doesn't matter. That's the essence of it.
Nope. It was just that.
How many people out there know that Seth Jones is like the slightly less poor man's Ristolainen?
It's a good question, but is there, I think even beyond that, like even if people are in denial about the fact that Jones is regressing right now and has not looked as good as people make him out to be, like this perennial Norris contender, in what world are you going to trade a top end center for a defenseman and then also in the process move back four spots out of the first overall pick of a draft? So not only are you getting the better player, you're also getting the better draft pick. Like it's not even like you could say that's like a video game trade, because even a video game, if you tried to offer that, would probably stop you and be like, what the hell are you thinking right now? Like, it's ridiculous.
We also should probably mention that Seth Jones has 1 year left on his deal.
And Jack Eichel has five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? And that was, that proposal was made in all seriousness. I don't know. Maybe people overvalue him. Seth Jones, that is.
You think?
So, whereas, so him and Ristolainen were taken in the same top 10, the same year in 2013. Whereas Ristolainen was bad at first, like most guys that get too many minutes young, and then got a little bit better and was a almost passable player that made too much money and then has drifted back towards being one of the least valuable defensemen in the league. Seth Jones was okay. He played for the Predators at first, obviously, and then like pretty good for a few years. And he is on a 3-year decline to the point that he's also one of the least valuable defensemen in the NHL. I don't know why that is. I couldn't really explain that to you. It's a weird thing. He's not old. He's 25.
You think it could have been Tortorella?
Making him worse? But Tortorella was there that whole time. Tortorella was there when he was getting better, yeah, too.
I don't know. I mean, it's really interesting. I think the thing that I always think back to with that draft, it just kills me and just further shows just how long that this organization has just been totally inept, is that when Jones was drafted at the Sabres draft table, like started cheering because they didn't take Ristolainen. And even now, like you said, he has been on this 3-year decline. It's unquestioned that this is the case, but I just lose it to think that they really thought that Ristolainen was going to be better than Seth Jones. And for that matter, I mean, even though now, like we were saying with the decline, it's still no doubt Jones is better than Ristolainen, and even if he is regressed a lot. But
I would do
comical
one for
to
one.
Me.
I would do one for one, but I wouldn't give up much else besides Ristolainen because Jones is gone in a year. And so is Risto, frankly. Yeah. They're both gone in a year. I think it's interesting. Do you know who the least valuable defenseman in the league is by some measures of war?
Am I supposed to, is this rhetorical or do you want me to guess?
Feel free to guess. If you have any idea, who do you think? You remember, just keep in mind, if you really want to mark against value, so like build up your negative value, you have to play a lot. So it can't just be some scrub like Matt Irwin.
Yeah. Did Bogosian?
No, that's a good guess. That was a good guess. Erik Karlsson, who was also the most expensive defenseman in the league.
Man, what is going on in San Jose?
I think Carlson's foot just like never got better.
Yeah. But even still, like, it's not even like it's just him. I mean, I know that they have some bloated contracts there and are probably going to be screwed for a bit because they don't have much of a pipeline right now. But like, they need to like figure out the whole goaltending thing because they really should not be as bad as they are.
They shouldn't be. Well, they shouldn't be as bad as they are, but like, when they fell off, it was a little, like, not a little bit of goaltending. The goaltending was an issue. But they went to the conference finals with Martin Jones, like, in 2019, was it? 2019? So, like, Martin Jones was not good.
Yeah.
To put it lightly. He was actually very bad that year. And they still made the conference finals, but it was, like, a simultaneous drop-off. Like, they lost Marleau and then got him back. Pavelski's gone. Joe Thornton got really bad and then was also gone. Logan Couture drop off a little bit. Like, they had some depth, like Jonas Donskoy types, they're gone. And then like the thing was their defensemen, Carlson, Burns, and
Vlasic.
Vlasic, kind of all trash now, and they all make a lot of money. Like, the only guy that's on their team that is making big money and not screwing up really is Kane.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very one-dimensional guy. Because I don't know what, like, Meyer makes, or him or Hurdle, but at least they still have them for, like, good younger pieces. But, I mean, even Kane, though, still, like, he's not getting any younger. They really don't have too much in the way of, like, difference makers with guys who are younger. I know they have, like, Kevin LeBlanc, too, who's been a good, like, middle six, bottom six piece for them. But, woof.
So, you know, Tomáš Hertl Avenue is turning 28 years old this year.
28. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Well, Meyer was only like 24, though, right? He was the Eichel draft, wasn't he?
I think so. Let me look up Timo Meyer. Oh, actually, let me just look at their – hold on. Freaking – the mobile site for Hockey Reference ensnaring me in its trap once again.
Oh.
Let's see. Do. Yeah, Timo Meyer's 24. He had 31 points this year. Couture, 31 points. He's on the wrong side of 30. And then, like, after that, it's like Brent Burns still puts up points. Carlson, he scored 8 goals, but, man, 22 points. That Carlson used to be a point-a-game guy as a defenseman.
Yeah, it's not great.
And he's only 30 right now. Bad, tough. LeBlanc is their 6th leading scorer. And then after that, like, you can see their depth is trash just based on their scoring. It's after Carlson, it's Ryan Donato, Rudolf Spalsers, Mario Ferraro, John Leonard, formerly of the – no, it was Jim Leonard. Never mind. Dylan Gambrell, Nikolai something. Marlowe had 9 points in 56 games. Nieto only had 7 points. Tough.
That's tough. 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 Does anybody knows what it's like to be in a tough spot with a team at Sabres fans? So our San Jose fans who might be listening right now for whatever reason, we are with you.
Yeah. Keep the faith.
Keep it. Any other thoughts that you'd like to share before we sign off for the day, Taylor?
Yes. If you've never seen it, which, come on, you have to have seen it. And if you just want to see it again, watch to the highlights of the 1975 Stanley Cup Finals fog game.
Pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah, one of the coolest things that's ever happened in sports, and it happened right here in downtown Buffalo.
Damn right. All right, everybody. Well, thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Straight Up Sabres presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and Buffalo Fanatics. Make sure you're checking out both the Hockey Podcast Network and Buffalo Fanatics on their respective websites, along with any streaming platform that you use to check out the many podcasts that they're putting out. Also, as we had said at the top of this episode, this is brought to you by DraftKings. And make sure you're using our promo code THPN at checkout to take advantage of some great deals. So once again, use that promo code THPN. Make sure you're following us, Straight Up Sabres, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Also, you can check out Taylor and myself on Twitter. My handle is Brendan1423 and Taylor's is Nigrelli93. Both of those can be found in our Twitter bio, I should say, which you could find us at Straight Sabres. We'll be back with a new episode on Monday. Hopefully we'll have some news by then on either the trade or coaching front for the Sabres. But in the meantime, have a great rest of your week and weekend, everybody. We will talk to you soon.